Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed a bulletin. As of this moment, it's official. Hey Kids Comics is coming to deepelmonair.com as Hey Kids Comics Live. According to reliable sources, Andrew Farmer and Cole Houston will be appearing the second Saturday of every month in a brand new live show based on their weekly podcast, Hey Kids Comics. On Deep Elm On Air, broadcasting live from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Again, the second Saturday of every month, live with the ability for listeners and viewers to phone in during the show. More of the same irrepressible hijinks you've come to expect, with a few new twists, because they will have a live video feed courtesy of Deep Elm On Air. I hope that all of my fellow Americans will join me in watching this new program. Thank you.
That is truly disturbing news, Rolando. Now on to sports with Rooster McGavin!
Well, Roos, what do you got for us?
Hey everybody, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. You have reached us at the end of yet another story arc. I am Andrew Farmer, your host, and with me always is co-host, producer, and kid who just cannot
toys.
Keep his... Yeah, exactly. Kid
give
who cannot
me some
keep
toys.
His,
give me some toys.
Cannot keep his hand out of the toy box. The Jedi, right. Cole Houston, progenitor of the... The Adam Warlock of the Jedi Cole universe.
Emerging as I have from my Kirby cocoon.
Speaking of, what the hell were those things called that we were just looking at? Oh, Stretch Serpent.
Stretch Serpent, yes. If you want to file something away for a future nightmare, or perhaps just relive a nightmarish childhood memory, Google Stretch Serpent. From Kenner, I believe.
If you're managing to sleep through the night and would like to change that, this is issue 105, Challenge of the Super Fails, Toy No Fair, where Cole and I take a well-deserved break and go to the well one more time to talk about dysfunctional toys.
It's yes, a place- return to SLE, the Isle of Misfit Toys.
That's right. We it's a place we feel at home. It's a safe place for us.
Right.
So,
as our picture, just like our,
we've done a lot of shows on comic book related toys and toys in general, but we're gonna put a little twist on it tonight for y'all. We're gonna do toys that comic books were based on. Of course, we're not going to stay away from awful toys in general, because
yes,
we cannot do that. We just that's
there are some toys out there based on. And then worse yet, I think it's important to talk about a toy you didn't see at Toys R Us or Kmart before they supposedly went bankrupt and then started having exclusive Star Wars figures I couldn't find anywhere near me, because there's not a Kmart within 100 miles.
Okay. You and that damn Ewok village, it hurt you, didn't it?
Those Ewok sets that I have to get other people to try to track down for me. But, you know, there was a line of toys that were exclusive to the direct market, even before DC Direct and Marvel, especially long before Marvel Select, but before DC Direct even started hitting its stride.
Right.
There were some little indie toy companies that were exclusively selling through Diamond and probably early on other comic distributors when there were such things. And
right, when there wasn't a monopoly.
But there was a lot of different, I don't know, I guess you could say toy lines that never would have existed because no real toy company worth their salt would have touched these damn things.
Like what, Cole?
Some of the ones I can think of off the top of my head were Cynthia.
Cynthia. Hold on. It's spelled... spelled like Cynthia?
Spelled like S-I-N. Cynthia. Like a... I don't know, like a roller derby name or something. Or a stripper.
Like a roller derby name.
Yeah, Cynthia was a comic book.
Okay.
That came out in like the 90s during the just god-awful giant glut
of
independence, because everybody was publishing something back then.
Right.
And people were buying it, apparently, because Cynthia ran some ungodly number of issues. And, you know, there were, I forget who the hell published the damn thing, Lightning Comics.
Lightning Comics.
Lightning Comics. They were the purveyor of some of the worst comics in the world. And they had this line of, somebody decided to license that out. And they did action figures of Cynthia. And also some of the other characters from the same line, like Raven, R-A-V-Y-N. For some reason, the manufacturer of the Lightning Comics toy line, whether it was Lightning Comics themselves finding some sweatshop in Asia to do their bidding, or... you know, any number of other, but they, one of the big things that they did was, like, you know, there were variant paint jobs, like, you know, Cynthia and her traditional, what little part of her body was covered in reds and golds, or in the full silver kit. But apparently they decided in the packaging that the packages needed to be like double wide.
Okay.
And most of the time it was just so they could spread the accessories, of which there might be maybe two per figure across a giant blister.
Oh, yeah.
A tremendous waste of plastic, a tremendous footprint on the pegs of comic shops that bothered to carry. But my favorite thing was they used the cover for Cynthia number one, I believe, for the packaging of the figure. And the cover featured her with this giant demon guy standing nearby behind her.
Right.
With his legs spread half a mile apart. And that is, like, literally in his crotch-style area is where the scabbard for her sword accessory...
I'm looking at it right now!
And it's just the most frightening...
It's fantastic!
I mean, and years later, we're complaining about Milo Manara having done the cover for Spider-Woman. My apologies, Marvel. I forgot about the Cynthia crotch scabbard.
He's the demon of the Tartan Wang, apparently. I don't know if you know that. He's
apparently,
from...
Go right ahead. I didn't realize, though, that there were so many variations. There was a silver, there's one where she's in black, and then there's one where the entire figure is done entirely in kind of a mustardy yellow.
Really?
And I guess that was before the things like those Japanese figures like the Money were coming out.
Yeah.
I guess this was one where you could like paint her up to look like Deadpool or something if you're so inclined.
Yeah. Hellglow, by the way. Hellglow.
Hellglow, is that what that is?
That is Hellglow, otherwise known as we ran out of money to continue painting.
Yes.
Our figures.
It was much cheaper just to have them change the color of the base plastic. Hell glow.
Hell glow.
I'm going to start using that as an expletive.
Hell glow.
Oh, hell glow.
Well, see, there's a series of figures that I don't think I ever talked about on the show, and you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong here, okay? But I do believe that this falls firmly into the toys that led to comic books. Genre. And I don't think I've ever talked about them, but I was completely, as a child, completely addicted to this series of toys. And that was Mask.
Mask.
I loved Mask.
Yeah, I do believe Mask started out as a toy, if I'm not mistaken. And ironically, there's a really cool connection with Mask and the career of one of the coolest people in entertainment today.
Okay.
Seth Green.
Really?
As a boy, somehow, for some reason, I've never heard the full story as to how he got his ass in there in the first place, but he was at the International Toy Fair.
Okay.
One of the years that Kenner was peddling Mask.
Okay.
And he felt that they were grossly underselling his favorite toy line.
Right.
And he waited until the guy who was just, here's Mask, you put the helmets on and they have cars.
And the cars change into stuff.
Yeah. And, he goes to take a piss, and young teenage self Seth Green parks himself behind the thing and begins to present these things in the way someone who is enthusiastically excited about them
right.
would present them. And I think he wound up getting hired to finish out the...
the actual show?
And that launched his career.
Wow. That's really cool.
And what's incredibly cool is to see him tell the story, because you can just see the glee, and it's just lighting up. And on a different note, I do want to point out that the Lightning Comics line also featured Helena in both regular and blood spatter.
Oh.
Where someone in somewhere in Asia was charged with sticking a toothbrush in red paint and flicking it onto the action figure's breasts and body like some kind of hideous money shot, and then sending it on down the line.
Thank you for painting the picture for us. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and ironically, I wound up with one of those when Diamond closed down. We were given things no one wanted, I guess.
Do you still have it somewhere?
I actually do, and we're going to take that damn thing to all comics.
Yeah, we are. If I ever have an action figure, if we ever get the money together, which we should do a Kickstarter to rotoscope Cole and Andy action figures.
There's a bunch of these guys that come out. They're starting to show up at some of the Dallas Comic Cons. And doing 3D scan and print of people, cosplayers and such.
We should get this done.
I'm thinking, oh, crap.
And I want a blood spatter variant.
Blood spatter.
I want an Andy Farber Hey Kids Comics blood spatter variant.
Variant.
That's everything that I've ever wanted.
That needs to happen.
Everything that I've ever desired is right there. So what else do we got, Cole?
Well, the thing about it is, when the little indie toys started to really hit, when that was starting to become something that was going to happen, like it or not.
Yeah, this was going to happen.
Somebody optioned, and I think a lot of times it was the publishers finding some, fly-by-night toy manufacturer who'd fart out their stuff.
Right.
Because this was also the period where McFarlane Toys had been launched. Pretty soon everybody's like, oh, me too, I can do that.
Yeah, right. I can do that. I can make toys.
So what happened was, who was that? Ben Dunn's Warrior Nun Ariala. Every time I think about Warrior Nun Ariala, I just start channeling Jerry Seinfeld. She's a warrior nun. a warrior nun? Yeah, she's a warrior nun. But they did this thing, they churned out these Warrior Nun Ariala figures, both in the black and the white habit variations.
Well, sure.
That looked nothing like the character, even though they had some really nice Ben Dunn artwork there on the side. Oh, Antarctic Press was the publisher, Warrior Nun Ariala.
Well, sure.
And the thing about it is, Ben Dunn's style leans toward the manga, the sort of manganese look.
Right, right.
And these figures looked like garbage. And ironically, a couple of years later, they actually would go on and release a figure that looked like she did in the comic.
Okay.
Almost apologetically. And I'm racking my brain. I'm trying to figure out who it was. One other comic company had in the vein of Cynthia and all these others, they actually did a figure that had a removable top.
What?
And I later saw
what
a picture, and it was just like the kind of nondescriptive breasts that like a Barbie doll might have.
Yeah.
With pink circles painted on the end.
Oh, that's so bad.
And then, of course, she had a gaping hole in her chest where the peg for her top would rest. So, you know, it looked like, you know, if you combine that with the blood spatter Helena, it would have been a nasty scene indeed.
Once you get that scabbard out of there, for sure.
Yeah. Princess exit wound there. You don't want to see the other side where it just looked like somebody drizzled a bunch of spackle or something and then painted it red. But, and yeah, there's another picture for you. But yeah, those were some of the chief offenders that you were never going to see out in the Toys R Us and such.
Right. No.
Because they were never offered to Toys R Us. Though, ironically, some things you'd think Toys R Us would never have touched. Like many years later in an unrelated story, Robot Chicken action figures were available on open pegs at the Toys R Us, including Humpbot.
Right. Things have changed a little bit since our days of Toys R Us.
I bought my Humpbot figure, which you wind it up. It stands on little pegs in front of the washing machine, and you wind it up with a traditional little winding mechanism, and then it just does the pelvic thrust for all it's worth.
That's amazing. That is the best.
And I mean, it was a thing of beauty. I had to own it.
I'm trying to find, there was a series of toys, and I'm trying to see who released them, that was extremely popular. Well, I don't know if it was extremely popular. Okay, it was, they were action figures, but they were action figures based on independent comic books. So you had your 6-inch figure line for DC, from DC Direct, and you had your Marvel Legends figures. And then there was this line of independent toys that came out that had,
I believe I know the one you're at, because they did a Build-A-Figure.
Right. But it was like, Hack and Slash was one of them, I remember.
Is that the line that did Scud, the Disposable Assassin?
It might be. And that's what I'm trying to figure out what the line was called. And I can't remember for the life of me, but there were some winners in there, too. And you know who else, while we're talking about oddly, scantily clad action figures, McFarlane Toys was no slouch when it came to oddly, scantily clad action figures.
What you're looking for is Shocker Toy. Oh, yes. Yeah, McFarlane was, you know, where the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle line from Playmates was all about asymmetry.
Right.
That line was all about breastises and...
But what always amazed me about their line of toys, right, was you would have these... extremely detailed toys with like ribbons and pieces of costume that would come off and flourish and float around in the air, and they were all, you know, completely detailed, but they would be wearing no clothes. The entire costume that they were detailing was off of the character. Like, yeah. It made sense for a Spawn character to have, like, because, you know, for whatever reason, Spawn had to have 800 pounds of chains that floated around him like Jacob Marley at all times. But for the female characters, it was always like, good God, how did you do this? No, but yes, because you know what I've always wanted, and this is why I brought up the Shocker Toys Indie Spotlight series. I've always wanted a Strangers in Paradise series toy, because nothing is more exciting than the Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise Catchu toy. It's just the most boring thing in the history of boring toys.
Well, if you wanted something that would capture the level of just, you know, gut-wrenching excitement that came from reading more than a single issue of Strangers in Paradise, that figure did embody that beautifully. I remember I actually worked with someone who had met Terry Moore when he was, before he even got his start.
Right.
And he had seen the conceptual stuff and some early, you know, like an issue or two worth of his early work, just, you know, trying to sound people out. Is this even something? And this guy would just gush and go on and on about how amazing this was. And I remember reading it, like, is this going to go anywhere ever?
Yeah.
I mean, I followed the thing for like 12, for a year, and I left myself, you know, I was just really literally left wondering, what happened?
Is anything going to happen here? Something's got to happen eventually, right? I mean,
and also the other line I was thinking of with the Build-A-Figure was called Legendary Heroes.
That was another one. Yes, and that's
the one they did, like Savage Dragon.
And Pit was in that, I think.
Yeah, Pitt was the build-a-figure. It had Judge Dredd.
Didn't have Judge Death at some point?
Yeah, I think they did later get on to do Judge Death. They had Madman. And for the most part, those were pretty decent figures. I think the second line, I think that was also the line that did the Tick.
Right.
Even though Bandai had years earlier, and they did something in O'Neill.
Monkey Man, or O'Brien, yeah, wasn't it?
Monkey Man and O'Brien, that was it, yeah. Because the Monkey Man was a build-a-figure, and some kind of cyber force, multi-armed man was...
Somebody call Rick and find out what that was about.
Stuff. Yeah, and that was the line with Judge Death, Monkey Man and O'Brien build-a-figure. And they also did Marv from Sin City, so God bless them.
They did a Conan 2-pack, too, that I remember pretty vividly, because they did that hack and slash in the first series, and the second series they did a Conan. Those figures weren't too bad. I'm surprised we haven't talked about them on the show yet, because those figures were all
really
right-ish.
Need to do a show about the good action figures, not things like Snowman.
Snowman!
Which was from a bad indie that made a bad action figure in the vein of... I think that was what it was called, was Snowman.
It was called Snowman. I'm trying to remember the guy that did the Snowman comic book. Because about the time that came out was the time that I was really super heavy into going to conventions. If I remember right. And we went to... Because it came out from Avatar.
Yeah.
And we went to a convention... And the guy from Snowman was there. Like, he was in Artist Alley, and we were perusing Artist Alley, and we saw Snowman there, and we kind of laughed, like, with the guy. Like, we were like, yeah, Snowman, that's awesome. And he's like, no, you know, he gave me that, no, I'm serious, this is a serious book.
This is real.
We're doing this, this is real. And I'm like, you can't, no, this can't be real. Are you serious right now? This is real? I felt like an asshole, but yes, it was real.
Well, and in much the same way we were talking about, you know, the bad comic characters, and we weren't going to be forgiving of them, no matter their period. I have to say, I can channel back to a big childhood disappointment.
Okay.
In an action figure line, and that was Mego's superhero line. Which, the practical upside of that line was the incredible and never-to-be-repeated crossover of having licensed both Marvel and DC.
Okay.
And I don't think we'll ever see that happen again.
No. No, never.
Because that was a time when nobody was doing the things like that. And that was cool, but the downside was they had three different bodies for that entire line.
So how many figures did they do?
Oh, God, dozens and dozens of characters. But they had heroic male,
okay.
Fat male, and heroic female.
Okay.
And that way, heroic female could be Invisible Girl.
Right.
And I think that was the only one they ever made. It's the only female character they bothered with. But, you know, heroic male could be redressed. I think they actually may have had yet another body or another torso and arms.
Right.
Actually, they had like superheroic male, which was used for the Hulk.
It was a very special build, yeah.
Yeah. But then you had characters like the Thing who got the short shrift, because a lot of it was about having plastic bodies and cloth costumes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Thing comes off looking like a guy wearing a Thing costume. Because he has these PJs on in a Thing pattern.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Yeah, it's a awful. Sad little thing. I mean, I actually had the Aquaman, of course, back in the day.
Well, yeah.
It was unfortunate that he really was not designed to be in the bathtub, because his...
Right, I mean, and then it shrinks, and then you got to dry it, and it shrinks. It's awful.
Yeah, well, you know, he gets a little waterlogged, and then he gets kind of mildewy down inside his plastic boots. It's just a god awful mess. And I really, really wanted the lizard, because he was kind of cool, because he was sort of value added.
Right.
Because in addition to him having a torn up lab coat that had to be factory torn up, he had a cloth tail jutting out of his ass.
I love it. I love it. I've got it. Okay, so I've got it. Since you're talking about the looking back,
yeah,
on my favorite toy line when I was a kid, and I don't think that this is the result of the toys as much as it is a result of the comic books that were out at the time that these toys were coming out. It's sort of a junction, a nexus of just bad ideas happening. And I absolutely loved this toy line with every fiber of my being. And I go back and I look at them now, and I've done this recently because I was looking at, matter of fact, you got me one, thankfully, and I still love them. I still think that they're great for the kitsch value of them. The Total Justice line by Kenner.
Ah, yes, Total Justice.
Which were horrible toys. Because,
oh, absolutely.
A, they were not articulated. They were like 5-point articulated. Hips, arms, and neck were the articulation on these toys. Second, it looked like they were going to burst at any time. They could have just exploded because they were that like anabolically, like somebody just injected anabolic steroids into the hot plastic as they were pouring the molds. Just I still want every one of them because they're ridiculous. But like it's the exact opposite of what you were talking about with Mego, because everybody is made of just ridiculous plastic, shiny, and there was no nuance to any of them. Like Shazam, I remember Shazam's collar being,
oh yes,
like 4 inches tall on a 6-inch figure, just gigantic. And that's all I wanted to say about that. They were fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. We also talk about, you know, a figure that was very much a product of its day. The Masters of the Universe have proven that, you know, you could make an action figure that was ridiculously broad in stature and reuse the same body for everybody.
Right.
And the literally. Folks over at Remco, who were, you know, largely remanded to the grocery store shelf during much of their toy making heyday, you know, they made the kind of crap your grandma would buy for you at the grocery store.
Right.
Not the stuff that would be at Toys by Roy.
At Children's Palace, damn it.
That's right. And Circus World. But Remco bought an obscure character.
Okay.
From DC. Warlord.
Oh, God bless him for that, by the way.
And they churned out a moderately impressive line that consisted of 4 principal characters. You had Warlord himself.
Right.
In his little, his leopard skin Speedo. And his little war bonnet there, his God. War helmet. Then you had his buddy Machisti. I'm guessing here. You had 2 versions of Mikola, who I'm guessing must be a bad guy. He came with a bow and a stick.
A bow and a stick.
So apparently he is the worst arrow maker. Because that is the least aerodynamic projectile. Then you had Deimos, who I'm sure is some evil wizard guy because he's got a crystal ball on a plunger.
Right.
And then you had Arak, who I believe is Arak's son of Thunder.
Well, why wouldn't he be?
Licensed character, I think, from some other publisher with his tomahawk and bowie knife. And there were 2 versions of him. There were actually 2 versions of Mikola. Perhaps in the other one he came with a proper arrow.
And only 1 version of Warlord.
And of course, Hercules, who has the same stick but no bow.
Oh, and you know what? It's a damn shame. Because Warlord was rife and ready for just a huge...
Could have been a contender.
Could have been a contender. But they were... The possibilities for a Warlord comic, or a Warlord action figure line... Insane. Just imagine what you could have done with that. You know what, though? Remco, and the same year that they got the Warlord series of toys, got another DC series of toys, in which they went the 3¾-inch route instead of the larger size, and that would be Sergeant Rock.
Oh, that's right.
Licensed from DC as well. So they made a few toys out in the 80s for DC, apparently. I wonder if they got them all in like a package, deal. And while we're on Rimco, a year later...
And why not?
They made a series of toys that to this day, in my mind, is the holy grail of toys that went on to become fairly successful comic books. And those would be Crystar.
Crystar, yes indeed.
They made a literal shit ton. If you had a ton of shit, that would be the amount of toys that they made for Crystar. Amazing stuff for Crystar, which Crystar was one of those, and correct me if I'm wrong, Cole, where the toys came before the comic.
Oh, absolutely. You're on the right track there. And the thing about it is, with Crystar, that was one of those toy lines when it got to be, I think, cost effective to just use the living hell out of translucent plastics. I want to go on a limb here. I think there was probably a time when that just wasn't economically viable.
Well, sure.
And so, you know, when it became cheap enough, then you basically, they went wild because the Crystar line consisted of opaque plastic lava people.
Which were amazing, by the way.
And then you had the translucent plastic crystalline people in various shades of crystal, from blues to greens to... And then you had Feldspar, who was half lava, half crystal.
God, I miss these toys, man.
And I remember reading the first issue of the Crystar comic and deciding, okay, this is as far as I'm ever going to go. When toward the end of the book, Feldspar has to admit that he must remain ever neutral between Crystar and Lava Boy.
Well, he's got to keep the balance, man. How do you?
Yeah, because he is the embodiment of said balance. So I think he was just pandering to himself.
But there were, there was an opaque crystal dragon.
Yes, that.
There was a crystal.
That thing is fairly impressive looking. It's bizarre as all hell, but it's fairly impressive looking.
And they went all in with their creative license, is what I'm saying. Okay, there was a guy, and this one always cracked me up. Even at the time, there was one of the crystal warriors with an eye patch. The guy's
That's made of crystal, yes.
And he has an eye patch.
Yeah, kind of a triangular eye patch, just to be cool.
It was.
He had some weird hat.
Yeah.
Another toy line come comic was Sectars.
Oh, I loved Sectars, man.
Sectars was about a 6-inch tall action figure line that was typified by having, in addition to some various plastic bugs of different ilks, different species and types, the Sectars themselves were sort of half human, half insect creatures. Or beings.
Right.
And one of the things that made Sectar special was some of the bigger playsets included a Sectar's figure and a beast of burden, a mount for said figure, that was a hand puppet for their strange little pentactile. Because they were like five-legged, unless you were like inbred and had an extra thumb.
Well, they were truly...
And then you couldn't play with it because there weren't enough fingers in the gloves that made up the legs.
They were truly the Zsa Zsa Gabor of toy lines. Because it was like silk glove that you would put on, and then it had these awful, thin, cellophane-y plastic wings on one...
I just really wanted one day to see Michael Jackson come out on stage with a second... on his hand.
It would have really sold the hell out of Sectars.
That's so true. If they could have gone on that. Big opportunity missed.
Big offer. Drop the ball. Way to drop the ball.
Michael Jackson's star rose. Sectars fell. Well, fun fact, going back to Crystar, Feldspar.
Yes.
Is a tactosilicate mineral that makes up as much as 60% of the Earth's crust.
Tactosilicate.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Tacto silicate.
Tacto silicates. Where do these figures fall on the Mohs scale? That's what I want to know.
Yes, indeed.
But yes, let's go to I want to go to one that I never actually collected, which is weird for me because I really supported toys in the 80s. Like I propped up the industry myself, I believe. With things like the Rock Lords, I bought all of the Rock Lords. Like the Rock Lords were fantastic. They made me. Speaking of Crystar, the the rocks that turned into robots. Come on, seriously? Like or
I mean, somebody deserves a prize for being able to foist that onto a
some coked up guy that created Alf decided that the Rock Lords were going to be a good idea. But what about There was one that came that during my research I came to that I had never even heard of before, and that was Mantech.
Yes.
What is going on with Mantech?
And it sounds like, you know, something you would. It sounds like a feature in like Maxim.
Right. It's in GQ. It's Mantech.
Oh, is that? I get those too. Mixed up. Yeah, GQ is your father's Maxim.
GQ is your father's Maxim. I really like that. That's good.
So, yeah, Mantech. I honestly was not familiar with Mantech.
Like, I Mantech. Wasn't either, and that was really weird. But the thing is, Mantech is one
apparently
of those.
Made by Rimco.
Of course, they
so that
see.
That explains a lot.
See,
yeah.
And the whole idea of Mantech is that you could break down the toys and they're like those new Marvel bust up figures, where you can break them down and and build them into different. You know, they were all kind of segmented, where you could put the leg of this guy into this guy. And,
yeah, you could yank his arm off. Absolutely.
And the thing is, this is one of those where the toy led to a comic book. And oddly enough, that comic book was made by Archie Comics.
Yes, I think, you know, the odd history of the comic book based on a toy line.
Right.
Really goes back to a few amazing hits, like Rom the Space Knight. Where they took one of the dullest toys in the world and turned it into like a 100-issue series.
Right.
Whatever it ran. And it was a good series. It was well written. It was fun. And of course, he eventually met Shang-Chi. So that just, you know.
That just made it all worthwhile for you, at least.
It takes it beyond amazing. And, you know, you had things like the Micronauts. And, you know, I think there was an editorial mandate that the Lightning is striking a lot. And without realizing, it's because we didn't put hacks on the job.
Right.
Or they put hacks on the job who really got to show their true abilities and became somebody. I'm not sure which. I think it's probably the former. I think they had some really good people on some of these. So, you know, do you put your top writer, if you're Marvel Comics and you're creating a line, a new comic line based on a novelty, squishy bulk on Mad Balls?
No, you don't.
Do you put your top guy over at Star Comics on Mad Balls? No, of course not. Do you put your top guy on Air Raiders based on the obscure Kenner title? But apparently Archie Comics was not content with just Mantech.
No?
No, they also, I was surprised at this, I don't even remember seeing this, Kushkins.
Oh.
The Kush was was not something on Urban Dictionary. It was in fact something like this ball made of rubber strings that was inexplicable how this thing was called into existence.
I would love to hear the story of how Kush was invented.
Yes, was it like some sort of freak accident, like Corningware, where somebody screwed up on the manufacturing process, and when they tried to throw out the bad dishware, they couldn't get it to break to save their lives?
WD-40?
Yeah, so many things. And yeah, was it an industrial accident or purpose engineered? But once the Kush ball was out there, somebody decided to plug little plastic faces and arms on them and call them Kushkins.
Right.
And then somebody at Archie decided, let's make a comic book
These are really popular.
Yeah, so it's bound to translate. And was it Marvel? Yes, the Star Comics just seemed to be like, let's park all of our, and maybe this is why, because they didn't like try to hide the toy-related comics somewhere else back when they used to fold them into the Marvel Universe. But Chuck Norris Karate Commandos.
Oh.
Was also...
That's rough. That's rough. But you know what? There were some really good stuff that came out of toys becoming comic books too, though, because not only did you have Rom the Space Knight, which it speaks for itself.
Yeah, and we're going to do an issue some point down the line where we talk about the comics that far exceeded the toy.
Because you've got your Transformers.
Mantech will not be on.
No, that. No, it will not. But you've got your Transformers, and you've got your
Shogun Warriors, G.I. Joe,
which features friend of the show. I would like to think he's friend of the show, at least. Larry Hama. I'm not sure if he's an actual friend of the show or not. Yeah. But
he may never even heard of us. He may never even remember he was on one of my Finish It things at AllCon, but that's okay.
But Larry Hama, God. So there was some good to come out of this, and you're right. We will slate and do a show based on the good ones.
Yeah, and it's hard to avoid talking about the good stuff when you're trying to concentrate on the bad. It's almost like a palate cleanser between bad courses.
Where does Silverhawks fall into this category?
Silverhawks. If I'm not mistaken, it was a cartoon.
It was a cartoon that became a toy that became a comic book.
Yes. And I think this a similar sort of thing, another toy that became a comic. I think the Inhumanoids got a brief comic
book. Oh, no. Awful, awful. Sorry.
Inhumanoids.
My butt full on puckered when you said Inhumanoids.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm not surprised because that's bound to happen. And then there was another toy line based on a... Basically, it was based on a cartoon based on a comic.
Okay.
That was based on a comic that was based on a comic. Ironically, there was an independent comic book called Xenozoic Tales.
Okay.
And I always thought, had Amazing Heroes still been around, I would love to have seen someone do a silly cover for a comic called Xenophobic
Tales.
And the cover would be like this old couple sitting on their porch watching a minority couple move in next door. It's an anthology. But... Schultz, because that's sinking in a little bit.
Cole, we need to get a Kickstarter to start you your comic book company. That's what we need to do.
that's what we need to do. Yes, yes, it's Xenophobic Tales. But basically, you have writer-artist Mark Schultz creates a series of the Earth in the Xenozoic era. Which apparently, for some reason, all of these dinosaurs and prehistoric creatures have been sort of willed back into existence, and mankind has been reduced to a semi-tribal, semi-road warrior sort of arrangement, plus dinosaurs.
Yes.
And the Jack Cadillac Tenric is running around in his giant souped-up Cadillac with all kinds of extra stuff sticking out of it. And, taking a shotgun to ward off any Tyrannosaurus or...
Well, sure. I mean, that, yeah, you've got to...
You know, any Struthiomimus that may have wandered off the game trail.
Struthiomimus.
So... you have the this spun off another comic, oddly enough, called Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Oh, did it?
Which was sort of the Xenozoic Tales light.
Right. I love Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
And in color, and then that spawned a cartoon, which then spawned an awful toy line.
Really, it's a Rube Goldbergian chain reaction.
It really is. You can kind of follow the trail, the history of how that you know, the one led another. It's the next inevitable phase.
Then the spinning
quote Dr. Heller from Mr. Smith.
So,
and the thing about Cadillac's dinosaurs, it repurposed Dino Riders dinosaurs.
Nice.
So they just took what they already had and renamed it.
Right.
And that's why the Cadillacs and dinosaurs have all kinds of giant, you know, battle cats armor stuff stuck all over them and these glassy plastic eyes, because that was formerly Dino Riders, which was also repurposed simply as a line of dinosaur figures without all the armor and missiles. And
speaking of dinosaurs, Cole, we're getting ready to close the show. So I kind of want to end on a little known age in the epoch of Earth. That would be the Bone Age.
Oh, the Bone Age. It has absolutely zero connection to comics, but by God, can't let the Bone
Age go. No, we're not letting the Bone Age go, all right? So Bone Age was a series of toys that I somehow didn't know existed, released by Kenner from 87 to 88 of, God, Bone Age.
Bone Age. Yes, Bone Age were these dinosaur skeleton-like creatures.
I guess. Do we know when? Is there a back? See, that's why we need a comic book about Bone Age. I want someone to kickstart a Bone Age comic book, because there's a lot of backstory here that I need clarified.
It needs a lot of help. A lot of help. But yeah, apparently the Bone Age was... Bone Age.
When did the Bone Age?
Sorry,
when
I have a hard time with Bone Age.
When did the?
But yeah, Bone Age. They were like these dinosaur skeleton things that came with various, like little cavemen guys. And there was the Rock Clan and the Lava Clan and the, I don't know, Lucky Clover Clan or whatever.
Right.
And they all, you know, each had their own factions and their own dinosaur skeletons they could ride around on that had dino missiles and like the Triceratops' horns were spring-loaded, just like we believe they were in real life.
Right. There was that whole thing about the Brontosaurus and the T-Rex not existing. They were built up during the Paleontologist War. You know, and I'm not being facetious. The two guys that the two paleontologists that, you know, during like kind of the P.T. Barnum phase of paleontology.
In fact, to touch on that little bit of history, in all honesty, there's a book I've been meaning to get myself called was it Cowboys and Bone Spurs or something like that.
Really,
I'll have to find it, but it is actually it actually features P.T. Barnum, who was a contemporary during those that age. What was the name of that? But it's it actually takes place, and it's basically a cartoon kind of comic book, rather, history of that, probably very dramatized and such. But talks about that.
What I'm getting at is, who's to say that we didn't know that Triceratops' horns didn't fly off?
That is so true.
Who's to say that cavemen didn't have a weapon called the Rambammer? Which is, by the way, a weapon that you could get as part of the Bone Age action figure. Complete action system. Kenner decided this wasn't just a line of action figures. This was this is impressive. The hammer hook, which was a grappling hook, connects to your Bone Age figures to create unique prehistoric weapons. I'm pretty sure most weapons in the prehistoric, whenever this was, they decided this was going to be a thing, were pretty unique. No two being the same. The club flinger. Oh my God, this is amazing.
I've been there. I've been to club flinger.
Have you? Did they let you in?
Yeah.
The door's a little tough.
One time. Yeah. It's usually I know the maitre d'.
Oh, okay, cool.
They don't have one, but that's what I said, and they let me in.
A giant, it looks like flint and wood club, sort of tomahawkish, strapped to the skull of some poor animal, then that skull then turned into some sort of conveyance vehicle with a big wooden... I don't know how it gets from place to place. Doesn't seem that there's any kind of...
The physics were different in the Bone Age.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. The physics were different.
Oh, and back on the serious note, it was Bone Sharps, Cowboys, and Thunder Lizards.
Oh, really?
By Jim Ottavani.
Okay.
And is available, I suspect you can probably find it on Amazon, and I've been meaning to get a copy of this for a long time, but it does tell the tale of Edward Drinker Cope and Othniel Charles Marsh.
Really?
And their contest across the Badlands of North America to discover and catalog and dig up and get as many dinosaurs under their belts as they possibly could.
Yeah, I had actually studied that a little bit.
And apparently, according to this, they actually invented the Bone Age.
Did they? They were consultants on yes. the Bone Age.
They actually, via Ouija.
oh, they're still alive, Cole. No, they're severed heads in a tank somewhere.
People weren't meant to know that.
Oh man! But,
and speaking of dinosaurs, I'm gonna paint myself an old dinosaur here.
Okay.
There's one thing that I was, you know, reflecting back on bad comic book toys.
Sure.
And you know, most of the time that occurs on someone else's watch. It's basically somebody backs up the money truck, and DC or Marvel says, "Have at it." And that's why you get things like the original Toy Biz Lex Luthor.
Oh.
With holding up a fist like he's doing a gang sign, or the very first Toy Biz Thor, which had no cape.
Uh-huh.
I actually found an extra superpower Superman cape that I reversed so I could feel like I could display this with pride. But I think it's a bigger tragedy in my mind when the toy company itself is wholly owned and operated by the publisher.
Okay.
And they allow something like, joke, DC Direct's Blamoids.
Lamoids?
Blamoids.
Oh, you don't,
I ask you now, if you're not familiar with Blamoids, take a moment to familiarize yourself with this. I'm not a big fan of block figures.
And you're not a fan of sort of that...
Or even, I mean, I have a lifelong hatred of bobbleheads. And, even the pop vinyl, I can't get behind that. But then, as in all things, there's an exception to every rule. Because when I saw at a comic shop very recently, back in July, the pop vinyl Sharknado, I had no choice.
Yeah, but that's kitschy, and you can get away with it.
Yeah,
but
that's different, because there will never be any other Sharknado collectible.
Right.
But there will be other Star Wars, or Lord of the Rings, or...
Whatever you want.
Duck Dynasty, for God's sake.
Right.
Collectibles out there, you know. If I ever wanted a Duck Dynasty thing, I'll just go buy one of those Uncle Si beards at Walmart.
And rotoscope that figure. We'll have an Uncle Si variant.
That's right. But, you know, the Blamoid just, and I couldn't remember the name of it. I thought it was Blastoid, and I found out that that's like a rock formation when you have like, where, you know, when the rock was being formed, it sort of bubbled up. And that's what a Blastoid is, apparently. But a Blamoid is an attempt to apply some sort of strange geometry to a stylized block figure of your favorite DC superhero.
Right.
And it is just more kinds of wrong than I care to think about.
It should just be noted.
The most decidedly unappealing.
It should, however, be noted that you have, like you said, you have no love for minifigures, but you also have no love for sort of the new school vinyl.
Yeah, a lot of the designer vinyl stuff has no appeal to me. The tough cigarette smoking bunny shaped thing, the rejects from Ed Big Daddy Roth.
Right. None of that for you has any real.
They hold no real world appeal for me.
Right. So it's a little more painful for you than it is for. For most people, just seeing it in passing. Like, I see them and I go, okay, that's just another thing that I'm not going to buy. For you, it's an affront. For you, it's an attack on your sensibilities.
Yeah.
All right, let's close the show out. We've been doing this now. Yet another hour has passed. The end of a story arc has reached us.
Have we already run out of story arc already? This was one I was so looking forward to. It's sad to see it go.
It is, and we'll revisit it, of course. And I think that we did it justice.
Absolutely.
So thank you again, Cole, for going on that journey with me. I don't know, without my
that's
Clark.
That's a journey best not to... Yeah, you don't want to take that journey by yourself.
Yeah, I don't think Lewis would have made it without his Clark, and you definitely made... Yeah. You. We got on that canoe together this time around, every time around. So why don't you go ahead and plug what you got going on there, buddy?
All right. Well, of course, we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, home of an ever-growing... a variety of podcasts and feature articles and all manner of things. And you can also find me and Eddie Medina every other Sunday at deepelemonair.com on the Rancor Pit Live, and coming very soon, the second Saturday, I should say, of every month, we will be bringing you a brand new show over at Deep Elm on Air.
Yes, we will.
Hey Kids Comics Live.
What? So excited. I'm so excited. Like, I can't even keep my head in the game.
Everything you've come to love, only liver.
Only Cole and I's mugs, which you can witness.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure that, you know, Cole and I We aren't scared of pulling stunts either. And I was thinking about that. I was running through a short list of stunts that we could pull. It's honestly horrifying, the things that we can do. So that's going to be the 13th of September is the first one. So the day after this comes out.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. Yes. So,
wow.
So one day after this show is released, we are going to be live at deepelemonair.com.
Absolutely. So be sure and watch for us there, because it's going to be just insane.
That's right.
And, you know, I've already, thanks to the Rancor Pit Live, I've already dispelled all preconceived notions of what I looked like. apologies for all of the images that I've used all these years to make people think that I looked like someone entirely different.
We call that catfishing where I'm from. Speaking of catfishing, are we still on for our noodling date?
I am indeed. I am very much looking forward to that. That will actually be the Sunday following the Rancor Pit Live. Andy and I will be convening at a nearby at Slaughter Swamp. In fact,
no, one thing you do yes, not want to do, if there's one thing you never want to do, it's noodle in Slaughter Swamp. that you don't know what you're going to pull out of.
That is so true. We'll find a different location, perhaps, an ordinary body of water. And, of course, there's also, conventions in the great state of Texas. You can visit Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com. You can watch for tweets on the Twitter.
I'm still at
Jedi Cole U on Twitter, and we'll probably be like tweeting the hell out of things when the live show's coming up.
Oh yeah.
And what else is going on? Oh, you can write to us.
There you go.
Please write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Little unrelated to this show, but if you've been following even if you haven't, the Rancor Pit wants your pipe cleaner and pine cone Rancors.
No.
Be sure and send in your photos. we're looking for your arts and crafts here, people.
That is awesome.
We have a prize for you, and of course, we're still waiting on somebody to tell us how they got burned on first issues, so you can get your first issue of Web of Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
Hey Kids Comics.
And we're also going
to
hit that.
Jump on that now, because we're taking it to the live show, and that's going to be a whole different thing.
Yeah, it's a whole different ball game. That's a different tier. So if you're listening to this and you want to let us know how you got burnt on first issues, much like Cole's Web of Spider-Man story or my image story, feel free to let us know. And with all that,
I think we're ready to wrap it all up.
There you go. This has been the end of an arc in a marathon recording session for Cole and I. The next time you hear a show from us, theoretically, I will have taken Hey Kids Comics headquarters, and in an effort to increase the Jedi Cole Universe synergy and ecosphere, corporate ecosphere, have moved it to Dallas-Fort Worth area. So you can expect a lot more live shenanigans coming from Hey Kids Comics once we have the home field advantage. So that's happening. But again, if you need anything, if you want anything, if you want us to do anything, please feel free to let us know. Buy, sell, collect. I always want to say sell. Buy, collect, and enjoy comics and comic toys, no matter how bad they are. Like I said, the Total Justice line's awful, but I still want to have every single one of them. Watch us live.
Hashtag giant weapons.
Hashtag weird crystalline armor on the Flash. Watch us live tomorrow from 11 to 12 Central on deepelemonair.com. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Cole and I are going to go do a little practice noodling. And